KTRS.
Yeah, about that. McGraw's on jury duty, actually. I'm Vic Porcelli. Victoria Babu over there. It's the Victor Victoria edition of the McGraw Millhaven Show. And today's the day that we talk to Dick Weiss from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Hi, Dick.
Morning.
How
are you?
Say
he's former Post-Dispatch editor for, what, 30 years?
30 years.
Long time. Pleasure to talk to you. I'm excited that we got to do this.
Yeah.
So let's start with the John McCain story. New York Times runs a story. He has an inappropriate relationship with a female lobbyist.
Allegedly.
And then it turns out the story is not really accurate. I mean, fill us in at least on details and fact.
Well, we really don't know at this point whether John McCain had a relationship, illicit relationship. What the New York Times did was that they said that there were two people in McCain's campaign who believed he might be having one, and they wanted to get between him and this woman because they felt that it would destroy his reputation. These two people who were concerned spoke to the New York Times, and they have not been named. And that's where the controversy really is. I'm kind of rooting for the New York Times to be correct, because I think the New York Times is an important institution in American life, paper of record, and so on. But I don't think the story really passes muster, because you don't take on somebody, a presidential candidate, John McCain, who has the reputation that he does, and taint it with unidentified sources.
I
feel like they went wrong.
I agree. A gentleman last week, I was saying, that doesn't this put the New York Times in the spotlight? Isn't everything going to shine towards them if this isn't correct? Because you've got a history here of the Jason Blair incident. Two editors resigned under that story, under the plagiarism by that reporter.
Right.
How many years ago?
And then there was Judith Miller.
Judith Miller.
Weapons of Mass Destruction, in which the Times ran a number of stories from her. And what there seems to be, I think, is a bit of a pattern here in which reporters, the staff, are leading the editors around a little bit by the nose and saying, we've got this story nailed, or we've got a great story. And the editors lose sight of their BS detector, and they don't get in the way and filter these stories and make them pass muster. That's my feeling. That isn't to say that they're necessarily that the story is incorrect at this point. We don't know that it's correct. They haven't shared enough of their background and their sourcing for reasonable people to know. And I think people who have a sense of fair-mindedness would say that you do not destroy or taint a man's reputation based on that kind of sourcing.
Do you think sometimes, Dick, that people who, I mean, I see this a lot in reporters on television, reporters with the newspaper, everybody seems to me in this age of news being everywhere looking for their next big break to be the next whatever, Dan Rather. I mean, Dan Rather's big famous thing with Nixon, when Nixon said, are you running for president? And his answer was, no, sir, are you? You know, I mean, that I think kind of started it. Do you think that's part of it, where people are looking for their big break? They want to be the next big thing?
Well, you know, you'd like to think that at the New York Times, which has won numerous Pulitzer Prizes over the years, and a number of reporters, I think, that were on this story are, I don't know if any had won Pulitzers, but they're highly decorated. They don't need to make the reputation on this particular story. And, of course, there's tremendous risk taking on a presidential candidate. So I don't think it's so much that as that they get on a story and they begin to believe that what they've got is true, and they go with it. But what they don't seem to recognize is that even though they may believe what they believe, if they don't have the background and the sourcing that makes it credible to readers who are on the outside and aren't as familiar with McCain's campaign, the way he goes about his business, it doesn't ring true to them. Well, at least not yet.
What happened to accuracy first versus being the first to get the story? I mean, you should be get it right, but get it and then get it first. But
well,
shouldn't
yeah,
get
absolutely.
It right come first?
Yeah, they say that, you know, the three most important words in journalism are accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think in this case that it was so much the New York Times rushing something into print. They've been working on this story at least since last December. And there were people who were saying, well, the New Republic was going to come out in a story about why the New York Times wasn't running the story. I kind of doubt that, there was that sort of pressure. I think it was just bad judgment.
What about political motivation?
Well, the New York Times is known as a liberal paper, but it's also a paper that endorsed John McCain.
That's true. I'll give you that.
Editorially. And there are people who say, well, why editorially would they endorse him if they knew or suspected that this was going on? And as a matter of fact, at papers across the country, there is a wall between the editorial department and the news department, and they both take a lot of pride in pretty much ignoring each other. So it wouldn't have made a difference in this case. Now, you can say that reporters have a bias, a liberal orientation, so in terms of the stories that they tackle. But I've found that most newspaper people are biased toward getting a good story, whether it's a liberal or a conservative. They've got a good. If they had the same material on Barack Obama, you bet they would go after it.
Yeah,
I believe that. I have a question though on that whole editorial. I wonder how much readers. How much stock readers put into the endorsement of a candidate by a newspaper? I mean, they pick it up and go, wow, the Post-Dispatch is endorsing this candidate. I'm going to go for that. Or is it just for information? I'm curious. Have you ever done studies over the years as an editor?
I don't think it makes a huge difference. On the other hand, I have seen people in St. Louis walk into the polls with their list of Post-Dispatch endorsements. Uh-huh. And sometimes I don't think the Post-Dispatch necessarily going to help you vote for a president, because that's you can get pretty well informed and you have your opinions and your biases, but you're voting on some obscure proposition,
right?
Often I'm looking at a proposition, oh right. Yes or no, I haven't read up on this, and they'll give you a quick take and say yes or no.
Sure, it's a great resource.
I might go that way.
Right.
Can a reporter truly be objective?
I think that that's a goal, an aspiration.
But can they truly do it? I mean, clearly they are registered one way or another.
Yes, and we are all captives of our own biographies.
Exactly.
The way in which we are raised, and the values that we have, and the way in which we look at the world. And so it isn't so much the way you write the story, but it's what story interests you. Conflicts of interest interest you? Mm-hmm. Do stories about lobbyists interest you? The journalists may be objective, but they're also passionate, and they have values. And one of the values at the Post-Dispatch that we had was to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. And that's a goal. That should not be a Democrat or Republican. That should be, looking out for, our fellow man and repairing the world. So, but the first question you ask will come from your background, the way
right.
you were raised.
Right. All right, let's talk a little bit about Jon Stewart was the host of the Oscars last night for the second year in a row. I'm going to say something that I'm sure is not popular, and I'm sure I'm on the minority of this opinion. I thought he was terrible.
Yeah. I didn't think he was terrible. I didn't think he was great. I would sort of give him a B. I think I like Jon Stewart's show. And on his show, he is irascible and iconoclastic. And I think when he walks out on that stage in the Oscars, I think he's a little bit awed by the audience. He didn't have a great show last year, as I recall, and apparently people were offended. And I kept feeling as if when he told the joke, he was waiting to see if people
right.
were offended.
I thought he seemed nervous to me a few times. But I guess it depends if you like him anyway. Versus not, because you're not a fan, Vic.
I'm not a fan, but that being said, I mean, I did put him in a different light here. Here's his Oscar time, but the one thing, like the whole Vanity Fair joke about the writers don't get to go to the Vanity Fair.
Party. Oh, right, right.
I mean, how many people out of 10 knew what he was talking about?
It fell flat.
A little bit of inside baseball. And the only joke I really enjoyed, and this is my own stupid sense of humor, is when they're making the a joke about Barack Hussein Obama,
yes.
his name, and he's
that
he mentioned
was the funniest thing.
The candidate Gadolf Hitler didn't do very well.
Right.
That I just burst
that
out
funny.
Laughing.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's probably the stupidest.
But that's his kind
line.
Of humor too.
Yeah, that's
it fits his genre.
But may I say,
juvenile best.
The guy who usually sits behind this microphone made that point. How long ago did McGraw-Milhaven say? In 1940, 5 or 6, would we elect a guy named Hitler?
Right.
Right.
I mean, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He said that all along.
And that's
along.
Why he cannot be in
a jury
pool. Because You're supposed to be judged by a jury of your peers, yeah. and McGraw has no peers.
That's right. He has no peers. He is up there on his own.
Oh, yes, and his, on his island. He's probably reading his book while he gets wait to be chosen.
You know, this whole jury duty thing, you know, I did it when I, 20 years ago I did it. Nobody cared that I was in radio, but then again, it wasn't a talk show like McGraw does. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But we were talking, Dick, about just... Some people hate to just do it. And I get the financial thing. If you can't afford to lose right. pay, I get that. I don't want anybody to lose pay. But if you are independently wealthy, or if your company, which mine did at the time, paid me for my jury duty, why not go and watch how the judicial process mm-hmm. works?
Right. You get something like $12 a day or something.
Yeah.
That's plus
what your company
yeah, did. Yeah, I've done the jury duty thing, and when they learned that I was a journalist, I was dismissed. Now, I've covered trials. And
it's fascinating, isn't it?
And actually, one time they had the press sit in the, it was a non-jury trial, the press sat in the jury box. Unfortunately, I had the flu that day, and I had to excuse myself, and it was much more, if you're sitting in the back, it's not as bad. If you're sitting in the jury box and you've got to bolt from the room, it's a little difficult. Yeah. I don't know why I'm talking about
that. I don't know either.
Nobody needs to hear that.
Jury duty.
But the point of that was to get a view from the juror's perspective?
They just wanted, that's where they put us.
Really?
It was a murder trial.
Wow.
And it's interesting how 12 Angry Men is running at the rep right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, so great play to see and really see the process of, you know, people. I mean, every angle, every aspect of people that do want to be here, don't want to be. I mean, you've seen it, Dick.
And then, you know, people are... They take on different personalities when they're on a jury. And sometimes it's a way to make up for the rest of your life that maybe didn't go so well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be jury foreman. Right. I've never been in charge of
it. Right. Or it'd be just to be a judge. You really are a judge.
If you've never seen the play, you have some people who are, you know, like Dick said, they're hell-bent on making a decision and making the right decision. And then you have somebody that just doesn't want to be there, wants to go home. I mean, and it's stuff that happens in deliberation rooms in America every single day.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And Vic, Dick always has at this time the best story you've never read.
I'm sorry.
Before we let
him
go.
Oh, yeah. I'll mention that. There's a link on my website to a piece in the Charlotte Observer about two women named Jen. Both happen to have the same last initial, Jen B. And one of the Jens, it's a mama's blog. Great advice on where to find the cheapest stroller and so on and so forth. Well, one of the Jens died suddenly. And... the other Jen thought, well, there goes the blog and so on. Well, it turns out hundreds of people showed up at this other Jen B's funeral, and because they had created a community through this blog, the Mama's blog, and quite a moving little story. And you can find it on weisswright.com with a link to the Charlotte Observer. I encourage people to read it, especially if you're a mom.
Okay.
I can't believe we've never met until today.
I know.
Great to meet you.
I've listened to you often.
Wonderful to talk to you.